Well, first of all, you only get one chance to make a great first impression. So the customer journey starts before they actually sign up. Keep showing up and offering value, and then people see it's real.
There's over 1.9 million podcasts. Most of them never see the results they expected. They want to monetize, but their show ends up costing them money, and they never achieve the listenership they desire. This show will help you launch, grow, monetize, and inspire with your podcast. Get ready to take notes, because here's your host, Adam Adams.
Welcome back to the podcast on podcasting. I had the gall to start a podcast called The Podcast on Podcasting. I'm sure there's others, but this is the one. Anyway, this is Adam Adams, your host. I'm with Stacey Sherman today. She's from Doing CX Right. We're going to get into that and what she does. She's launching her podcast right now. Should actually be launched before you listen to this, actually, called Doing CX Right with that little registered trademark. So we'll make sure that's in the show notes. You can just scroll down and be able to click on her podcast right now. We're going to be talking about customer experience. We'll start by going into her journey since she's just launching the podcast as we record. And I think this is going to be a huge beneficial episode for you because that's probably where you are as well. And you're probably in the beginning stages. You're probably working on this. And she's just a couple steps ahead and she'll be able to share with you the pros and cons, what she's going through. And then we'll dive into any questions that she has as a newer podcaster launching this month. What she has for me, as she'll get free coaching and consulting. And then I think I'm going to steal some free coaching and consulting from her too on customer experience so I can serve you, the listener, at a higher level. So with that said, Stacey, I know that the bio, there's a pain there with the bio because you are so awesome and you do so many cool things. What would you like to share with our listener today on just where you came from and why it matters to them? What we're going to be talking today about customer experience.
Yes, thank you. So I want to share that the people I speak to, everybody has a passion. Everybody has something to tell and something to give. And a lot of people are like, I don't know what that is. And I would say, well, what do people come to you for? That's it. And go with that. So for me, I started with a blog in 2017. Didn't know if anyone would ever read it. And they sure did. And so that gave me the courage to now take it to the next level in a variety of ways. And so one of those ways is podcasting. And I no longer have the fear, is anyone going to listen? Because when you show up authentically and have value to add, they show up, they listen. So the first thing really is knowing your why. I love Simon Sinek's book. You start with the why. When you know your why, then you can get started. That's my first tip. Know your why. Know who you are. And unfortunately, I find it easier to help others with that than myself.
I'm the same way. That's so funny that you say that.
It's really easy to give advice than take your own. But yes, so I'm figuring it out. I swear I changed my LinkedIn, my Clubhouse bio so many times, and I'm getting closer. So just start.
Love it. Good stuff. So Stacey Sherman on the podcast, and you're actually launching two podcasts, one with George Washington University and some other universities as well. And then you have your Doing CX Right. And I never knew what CX meant. You know, I knew what UX was, like user experience, user interface. Anyway, I know what they mean with the use because I've got a business partner. He founded an email marketing group and sold it in like 1999 before anyone even knew that there was anything like email marketing. But he always talks about UX and you something else. But CX, is that something where you made it up or is it something that I probably should have known?
So first of all, no shoulds. Don't should on yourself or others. I did not make it up. CX is a real term, a real acronym, just like every other industry has acronyms. CX, UX, UX is part of customer experience. EX, employee experience, it's a part of customer experience because happy employee does lead to a better customer experience naturally. So no, not a new term. Now, the other thing that's not new is customer service. And I want to make sure people realize that customer service has been around for a long time. That's the proactive getting help from a brand when you need help. Customer experience is much broader than that, much. If the customer service goes wrong, then it does affect the entire experience, but it is a piece of it. So keep that in mind when you're helping people with a podcast or anything you do, customer service is one element.
I love it. Thank you. I really appreciate you going into it. All right. Here's where I want to start with you today. I want to really dive into what's going on with you. You've got two podcasts launching, and what's the reason behind launching Doing CX Right? Like, what's your why, I guess, is the best question to ask.
Yeah. So I'm on a mission to create more real, authentic experiences so that there's no reason that we do have bad experiences. There's no reason that an employee doesn't feel included and satisfied and left out and all that. So as a worker, as an employee, and as a consumer, which we all are of brands, I want to help eliminate the dissatisfaction that we experience. And so that's what I do. Most of my hours doing it is in a big corporation. That's my day job. And that's where I'm really making a big impact. But it also comes through in my side hustle, where I'm helping others do it too. So that's the theme of the podcast shows, is getting people to do it right as leaders, but also as consumers, we have to own our experience too.
Good point. Good point. So that's your why. And what do you get out of it though? Like, you have a why of helping people, and I think that's always admirable to be thinking of others. But at the same time, does this feed into consulting? Is it possible that if you serve people at a high level through your podcast, that you'll make more money in your consulting part of your business? Or what's kind of the why there?
Yeah. So the answer is yes. Ultimately, first and foremost, when you do what you love and love what you do, it all comes back to you. So yes, I am mentoring people who are looking to infuse customer experience into their practice to differentiate their brand and gain a real competitive edge, because people don't buy on price alone. The answer is yes. The podcast allows me to be a thought leader, show thought leadership, help others, and ultimately for people who are in positions in companies or entrepreneurs who want to lead with customer experience at the forefront, I help them do it in a proven way.
I love it. Good stuff. And what are the main things that you've learned? Out of all the things that you're going through, pros and cons, what has come across your desk and you never would have thought, like, that this would happen as part of a podcast? I didn't know I was going to have to do this or something like that.
Yes. So a couple things. First of all, what really helped me a lot that others can do is that be a guest. So all last year, I was a guest on dozens of podcasts and radio shows. And that helped me, A, find my voice, B, learn how it works, and then really pay attention to the hosts that are doing a really good job. So that's first thing. So that's what I did a lot last year. And then this year, it really helped me say, okay, I'm ready to be on the other side and host and interview. Likewise, get over the fear of technology. So just like a blog years ago, I was afraid, like WordPress, it seemed intimidating and the technology, and then I got over it. So same thing with podcasting, is there's so much technology to make it a more seamless experience in the production of it. But the technology got in my way for a while where I didn't start because I was afraid of what I didn't know. I just want to show up and speak. I don't want to do anything else. So I would say getting over the fear of technology, and there's so many people willing to help, find your tribe, and then just crawl, walk, run.
Yeah, I completely agree. So one thing that you mentioned was, as you were getting into this, you started guesting on other people's shows. And I think the word you said was dozens of shows before you launched yours. And that helped you to know what that user experience was on the other side, being interviewed, what should be asked and things like that. And I think that's really good, valuable feedback for somebody in the beginning stages of a podcast. Jump on as a guest. So I think it's interesting that you have a differing opinion, and it definitely did open my mind. I just usually tell people, don't get on other people's podcasts until yours is ready, until you have yours, until you're ready to have like a call to action at the end, like go to this place, which is great for this episode here, because by the time this comes out, you know, doing CX Right is already out. They can just scroll down and click on that and be part of your podcast. I just feel like there's been a lot of people, especially in the real estate investing industry, they say, oh, I want to grow my real estate business. And the way that I need to do that is to get in front of the most amount of people. So they kind of go ready, fire, aim when they're getting on these other podcasts. And the concern that I've seen is when you get onto one podcast, typically it's going to be, you know, 2 to 3 years before that same host will bring you back on the show. So that's kind of the average. Some people might be able to get there in 6 months. Some people just never will, but it's usually 2 to 3 years. And so it can be difficult if you have something that you're going to want to promote to jump on those before you're ready to promote it, like ready, fire, aim versus ready, aim, fire. On the dozens of podcasts or a dozen plus podcasts that you've been on, are there any where you might kick yourself and say, man, I really should have had my podcast ready before I got on there? Or was it all a blessing because you just grew as a podcaster?
So what worked for me, the magic really was showing up, speaking, not expecting anything from someone, not selling anything. And because of that, what came from it was more followers on LinkedIn and social media, so that when I was ready, and I have a book here, I have two of them actually, customer experience books. So I co-authored two books with people that about customer experiences. I don't know that I would have ever had those opportunities for people to know that I'm an expert if I didn't show up and speak before I even had something. So it's organically brought me opportunities. Now, my blog, the same thing. Starting a blog, I wasn't selling anything at that time. It was writing. Same thing. So I know what it did for me is gain a following. So when I'm ready, like I'm going to do an online class about customer experience. I'm going to write my own Doing CX Right book over time. I'll have had the following where people are like, I want more.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for putting me in my place. I appreciate that very much.
But by the way, what's changed in 2021 is that there is this Clubhouse platform. And to me, you might not need to be on dozens of podcasts anymore, as I did, because Clubhouse didn't exist. So people can go on Clubhouse and find their voice and show thought leadership through that platform, which is a drop-in, drop-out platform to speak. If you use it right, it accomplishes the same thing.
So I do have a question about the fear of technology. So you did say one thing, which was all you really want to do is push the record button and then everything else done for you. Awesome. My team does that, by the way. So if you ever want to work together, that's what we do. We make it so you can push record. But you went through some challenges through the technology with, I guess, finding microphones, finding the right computer, the internet. What challenges were there in technology that a new podcaster needs to be aware of?
Yeah. So I would say first is recording. You know, what should I use? Because there's so many out there and everybody has an opinion. I think that hearing too many opinions got me stuck. And then I just picked one. And then I thought that it was really easy, and it is easy to record. But when I did, I didn't really like study the technology. I just dived in and did it. So what happened was I recorded and I didn't realize it records two different tracks. I was confused. So I couldn't actually replay it as one interview. I didn't know how to do that at first because it was recorded as separate tracks and downloaded as separate tracks. So I got all nervous and flustered, like, wait, this didn't work right, but it did work right. So the point is that know the technology before you use it.
Yeah. And,
or have your tribe who can help you.
That makes a lot of sense. I really appreciate that. All right. So what questions do you have? As somebody who's in the beginning stages of a podcast, do you want any tips, tricks, or ideas for your show?
Yes. So first of all, at first it was in my head, well, let me record conversations, use it as blog content. And then I thought, well, but then to get more awareness, putting it out there beyond that. So the question that I pondered and I still think about is putting it on YouTube certainly has great SEO value, but do I do YouTube and Apple, Spotify, and all that? Is there reason to do all versus one?
Okay. Good question. I like it. I would recommend for most people that you don't start by doing all of them. It's overwhelming. And when you're wearing tons of hats, you drop balls. When you're making a lot of spinning plates up there, it starts getting a little overwhelming, a little dangerous. One of those plates is going to fall off and break. And I don't really want that for anybody. So when I work with somebody, I ask them to think about where they want to start, what they want to put all their effort in. Because if you launch a YouTube channel and a podcast, for example, at the same time, you're going to be spread thin between the two of them. And neither of them are really going to take the type of traction that I think you want in your podcast growth. And people don't think about that. They think, oh, I'm missing out. They get this FOMO. They say, oh no, if I don't have it on YouTube, then I don't get all of the, you know, search engine optimizations. YouTube's one of the biggest search engines in the world. And nobody wants to miss out on all of those people. And so they decide to just go ahead and do it, but they're also having a really hard time, you know, growing the podcast. Either one of these platforms needs more of a ready, aim, fire mentality behind it. So if you're launching a podcast, you really need to put time and attention and effort behind making sure you have a good plan of execution for the launch. You want a good launch plan. So for example, you'll have pre-launch where you're going out on social media, Clubhouse, like you are, that's where we met, and your Facebook and your LinkedIn, and you tell people, this is what's coming. So I just interviewed Stacy today on the podcast on podcasting. She talked about customer experience. If you are interested in growing your customer experience for your podcast, drop a comment below and I'll make sure to give you that episode as soon as it goes live. So this is a pre-launch. It gets people excited about the one thing. Not about the two things or the three things or all the things that you're doing, but you're putting all your attention in one place. I don't remember who it was, but they're a famous investor from the past. Might have been Rockefeller. Who knows? I think someone's quoted him since and people think that that's who said it. I would have to look it up, but it's opposite of diversification. It's the opposite of trying it all and being everywhere and, you know, half-assing lots of things. And he says, put all of your eggs in one basket and watch it like a hawk. And I really recommend that when you're launching your thought leadership platform. If it's a book, don't worry about launching a podcast at the same time as your book or a YouTube at the same time. Put everything you got, because if you do, you can get that book to be a number one international bestseller. And then everybody's trying to support that book. Everybody knows about that book. And once you're done and you've got all the systems in place and it's where it needs to be, then you go and focus on a podcast, for example. So instead of doing YouTube and podcasts, I would do one or the other. And a lot of clients that I work with, we launch the podcast, we launch it, and we get them so that they're ranking in the top 1% on Apple. And after we do that, we launch the YouTube months down the road. And so you're really not missing out, but we're able to put marketing dollars, time and attention. We're able to do a pre-launch. We're able to do a hard launch, tell everybody about it. And now what you have is a huge podcast platform. And then when we launch the YouTube later, we have a huge YouTube platform. So my recommendation would be decide on one or the other, focus on it as hard as you can until it's out and systemized. And then to spend your time researching the second one and launch it really, really well. Because both platforms like YouTube and podcast, as well as books, all these platforms need to be launched correctly, or else you get lost in the noise. You become part of the 90 percentile, the bottom 90 percentile, which that's a lot of people, but they're all lost in the noise. So if you want to get into the top 10%, you got to do something about it. You got to work ahead of time. Does that help, Stacey?
It does. It definitely does. And I think the only exception might be if you have somebody on your team who's doing it for you, then, you know, if you had your YouTube expert and you had your podcast expert, if you're so lucky to have a quote team, if you're an entrepreneur and you have a team, then maybe you can not crawl, but walk or crawl faster. But I agree with you. It's focus. But then you raise another point. Are you supposed to write your book first and then do your podcast? Or can you do your podcast that will eventually get people to read your book?
Yeah. Either way, my thought is that you either start with one and you go all out on it, make sure that it gets and achieves what it can achieve. Even if you have a big team, launching like a book, a podcast, and a YouTube at the same time still can be a challenge, even with a huge team and you're spending money on the team, but your perfect avatar, your perfect listener, all of a sudden they have two or three choices. They're not going to know which one to go to. So you're going to have a few people that are in your world already. And they're like, well, I don't want to go to her book and her podcast and her YouTube. Like, that's just so much work. I'm just not going to do any of it. A lot of people, our listeners, our followers, our perfect avatar, they will decide to do nothing when they have too many choices. But when all you have is a podcast, hey, I need your help. Jump on here. Get a couple people that I trust to leave me a rating and review on that podcast. Now they know exactly what to do. They know where to fit in, and they're more likely to do something if you only give them one choice. So
what's the SEO value on Apple and Spotify? Is there an SEO value because I'm trying to link people back to my website?
So what we usually do is have a blog where it's part of the SEO. So we'll transcribe everything. And you'll still post the episode like you would normally post the episode. It automatically goes on the blog at the same time. But then you're also getting the SEO value as well through Google Analytics. But as far as SEO of just the podcast alone, it all depends, I guess, how you do it, right? I guess that's the biggest question is if you're going to say every single word, that's one thing because there's tags on the bottom of your podcast when you're publishing it to Libsyn or Buzzsprout or wherever, you click a certain amount of tags. Now, if somebody does the exact same tags for every single podcast, you're going to lose on the SEO game because Apple's like, nope, they're just copying and pasting. So they want you to use unique things. One of the great reasons why I have you, I'll have tags today of customer service. I'll have tags of user experience and things like that. I'll have all these tags that I've never used before, and that can help with somebody being able to find this podcast for sure.
Love it. Yep.
All right. I need to jump into your superpower of customer experience. So my first question is, who is my customer? Adam Adams, who do I serve?
You serve thought leaders in their space, in any industry. And again, it doesn't even have, I'm speaking from a business term because that's what I do, but it also doesn't have to be business. There's people who have hobbies and a passion, you know, but at the end of the day, everything kind of ends up as a business. Like even if you're a chef and you want to share your favorite best practices and techniques, well, maybe that person can be an advisor to others and therefore there's a business. So anyway, it's thought leadership that anybody who really is passionate about their topic is your audience to give them a platform to share it.
So when does it count as a customer? For example, I've got this podcast and there's, we'll just say there's hundreds of thousands of people listening. Not everybody's going to be a client. So how do I know what to use for customer experience while providing value on my podcast?
Well, first of all, you only get one chance to make a great first impression. So the customer journey starts before the journey, before the official journey, before they actually sign up.
Okay.
So keep showing up and offering value, and then people see it's real. Then you get into the real customer journey, and I highly recommend you map that out. How do they learn about you? How do they buy from you? What's that experience? And there's a whole journey. There's all these different touch points. Customer service, we talked about. If they need help, how easy or difficult is it to get it from you? So you map out the customer journey, and then you validate what you've designed to be the journey of working with you to actually, does it meet expectations? And you measure that. And that's how you do it right. There's no need to guess.
All right. I have so many questions then. So how do they learn? How do they buy? How easy or difficult is it for them to get help from me and for me to meet expectations? Number one huge takeaway is we should be setting expectations at every step of the way. And if we fall short of any of those expectations, I really think we're disappointing our customer because they won't believe or trust in us for anything in the future. So it seems that even on this podcast, it's free for the listener to be a part of this episode. There's no charge at all. But if I went in and I promised them that they were going to get the 5 ways to start a podcast, and we never talked about it anywhere on this episode, they'd be a little bit disappointed and they probably wouldn't trust me if I told them that once they hire me, they're going to get this other thing. So I like that part about meeting expectations. I have a lot of questions on how easy or difficult is it for them to get a hold of me. And the main reason why is because there's a lot of psychology in how easy or difficult it is to get a hold of people. For example, sometimes I've heard that it can benefit us by being difficult to get a hold of. And then you're more, what's the word for it? You're more, because it's scarce, it makes everybody want that thing. So it's like, oh, I don't have a whole team that's going to support you. It's only me one-on-one. And then they're, oh, I'm going to work with him one-on-one. And so that's scarce. And then people are like, I want to work with him because it's difficult to work with him. But at the same time, there might be other people that might say, I don't want to work with somebody if it's difficult at all. I want it to be as smooth and easy as possible. So where's the balance in that? Or is one or the other just completely wrong?
So I feel strongly, if I'm paying you, I need the level of effort really easy, whether I'm paying my bill, whether I'm trying to get help, whatever it is at that moment of truth, it has to be easy. Otherwise, I will leave. And worse, I'll tell others.
Love that. So it's more important to be accessible, in particular to those who are paying.
Correct. Now, let's go on the flip side, what you talked about, which is a great conversation. Yes, there is that sense of curiosity and premium feeling, like Clubhouse, right? You have to have an invite to get in. So it does create that buzz. It's hard to get Adam to run your show and make you successful. Yes, there's a sense, there's a psychology to it. At the same time, people are getting less patient. So if I try to reach you and you don't respond, and I'm a prospect, and you don't respond to me, I'm going to find somebody else. So you have to really manage it, you know, your brand.
Love that. Love that. So the big takeaway is that we should be accessible to find, to answer questions about working with us, to have the customer pay. It shouldn't be difficult or confusing to pay for that. And once onboarded, it needs to be served them at a very high level as well.
Yes. And you need to get the voice of the customer to define what you offer and how well you're offering it. Because you could create, let's say your services have ABC to it. Well, if you don't ask me as an example, do I need this? Is this of value before you launch? Then you're throwing it out the door and hope it sticks. So a customer experience CX best practices is talking to your customer, bring them to the table early on and validate what you think they need and learn from them. And then you go out the door and then you measure their satisfaction and where are the gaps. And it's an evolution. of testing, analyzing, adjusting, repeating.
How do you measure a customer satisfaction? If I do consulting with helping do a new podcast launch, what happens for me to be able to measure that? Am I constantly asking? Is there a survey that goes out? Am I just available if there is feedback? What's the best way there to make sure that I'm understanding how the client feels throughout the process?
So yes, the answer is there's a survey. That's not the only way that you get customer feedback, because there's unsolicited ways too, looking at social media and ratings and reviews. But yes, aggregating the voice of the customer. So what I like to do is map out the customer journey, and then at certain points, touch points or interactions with you, you're the brand, to get that feedback. It is not every single touch point, because you can get really overloaded, you know, and you can frustrate the customer. But there are points within the whole journey that you do get that pulse of the relationship. And that's where it's really valuable to continue, so that you know, especially when there's like a contract, a service contract, let's say, and you want to know, are they going to renew at the end of the X term? Well, if you know how you're doing early on, not just at the end, it's too late at the end to get them to renew or to buy again or upsell or whatever that is. It's too late to ask them at the end.
I like that a lot. That's super interesting. And I think I had an epiphany, and maybe the listener did too, where it seems natural where, all right, we're at the end of the term. Do you want to go ahead and renew? And you've really lost them. And I've seen that. I run a mastermind group around attracting capital, raising money for real estate and things like that. But within that group, it becomes January, and I'm like, oh, it's first week of January. Hey, did you want to stay in? And there's been about a third of the people, two thirds stay, but about a third of them are like, no, I'm good. I don't know if I need it anymore. I don't know if I'm being served. And I think that what you just said is something that I can take into that business and just start touching base with them throughout, where I already know that they want to be with me forever. You know, like, hey, they've told me 2 months ago, I never want to leave you. I always want to be a part of this. And I'm like, hey, we're going to be renewing that. Fine. Because I already know. I like that. I like the way the thought of that is beneficial to me. Any other customer experience? Oh, you know what? Let's do this, because it is at the time. This is one of my longest interviews, and I'm grateful that you spent so much time with me. So thank you. Doing CX Right is the podcast. It's available wherever you're listening to this podcast. Any closing remark as I let you go?
Yes, just thank you for having me. And I welcome people to come to my website, doingcxright.com, because there's a lot of information around how do you do CX right? How do you get started? How do you build that customer-centric culture where employees are delivering excellence, even when the boss isn't looking? There's so much there. And connect with me for mentorship on how do you do it? And it could be your brand differentiator. It's in your control.
Stacey, you added so much value to me and to the listener in many levels. So I want to say thank you. Thanks for coming on. I'll let you go. We'll see you soon. If you're glad that you checked out the podcast today, if you got some value out of this episode, some actionable takeaways, I invite you to do one of three things. A, you could do a written review on Apple. Let us know what you think. Just an honest written review. B, you could share the podcast with a friend of yours who needs it. Or C, at the very least, implement what you've learned to take your business and your podcast to the next level. And I'll see you on the next episode.